Well, Conte to part Euro. If Italy win the Euros and Immobile's top goal scorer, I'll sing the entire song to you in Italian.
Hey!
Myself and Immobile on top.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the OTB Football Podcast.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quick Start Car Insurance you can sort anytime online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at getsetgo.ie.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
All right, you're welcome along. It's Thursday's Off the Ball. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock this evening. It has been another really enjoyable day at Euro 2020. Belgium through to the last 16, a cracking game against Denmark. They went behind inside 90 seconds in that game. A hugely emotional Danish performance, full of intensity, but the class of Belgium shone through in the second half. Kevin De Bruyne off the bench at halftime. He set up one, he scored one, and Belgium have won that game by 2-1. Earlier, there was a win for Ukraine against North Macedonia. We'll keep an eye on the 8 o'clock kickoff as well, with the Dutch back in action. And John Giles is with us from 7:30. He's going to give us his thoughts on the opening week of the tournament. Tomorrow night is all about England against Scotland at Wembley, and we're going to be joined by Craig Brown, the man who had Scotland at Euro 96. So he's going to join us on the football show. And between 8 and 9, we will talk to the Wexford hurler Lee Chin ahead of the start of the championship, about the high scoring games, about him as a free taker, what it all means. And we'd also hear from the Irish sprinter Phil Healy, who could be competing in three separate sprint events at the Olympic Games. So that on the way between 8 and 9. 53106, the text number, at Off the Ball on Twitter. Joe Malloy, good evening.
Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
Richard McCormack, how are you?
Delighted about the delays at Torrey Pines, to be quite honest, because you boys are going to have quite the late night tonight.
So Rory McIlroy is now teeing off because of the 90 minutes delay at about 11 o'clock. Well, Richie, I'll be tuning into News Talk at midnight tonight for a live update from Torrey Pines, which as a licence fee payer, Richie, is my right and entitlement to get a live update from your good self at midnight.
Head a bit left of the dial there if you want money for your licence fee there, Nathan.
Maybe not. It's going to be a very late night at Torrey Pines. I haven't seen any of it yet, Joe. Have you been watching? I was watching the football.
A very sociable 11 o'clock for Rory McIlroy's tee time. Perfect. No, I haven't seen very much. I know Shane Larry had two birdies, but a triple bogey in between, which wasn't ideal. So I didn't actually see what happened there. I've been a mixture of recording a couple of interviews for next week and then keeping an eye on the last 25 minutes of that game in Copenhagen, which was a bloody good game, by the way. It was really good.
This tournament has just been top class so far. I'm never quite sure what to expect from a European Championship where there's such a mix in quality. But game after game, the attacking football, just the energy at the end of such a long season from the majority of teams has been brilliant. And this one was right up there with Denmark, to use that old rugby cliche, the emotional intensity. Their manager got it spot on, because you wondered how they would deal with everything that happened over the last few days and how they would react. And the pace that they played that first 20 minutes, half an hour, they could, should have been 3-4-0 up. They got the goal after 90 seconds, but Belgium bring on De Bruyne at half time. Eden Hazard comes on in the second half, and that sort of quality, there's probably going to be few teams in this tournament, Richie, that can deal with it.
That'll be the regret, really, that they didn't make more of those opening 20 minutes, half an hour, because they were by far the better team in that entire first half. But in those few minutes that we mentioned there, their intensity was amazing. They were creating chances. They made Belgium look like a very, very ordinary side for the first 45 minutes. And then we mentioned yesterday how one world-class player can pretty much turn everything for a team. With Wales last night, it was Gareth Bale. With Belgium today, although they do have a team strewn with stars, bringing on Kevin De Bruyne made all the difference for them. And it wasn't just his just sheer quality that turned, it was just the cleverness about him that completely turned that game and set Denmark then back on their heels. But you have to feel very, very sorry for Denmark, who, Stephen Doyle said it there on Twitter, our colleague, just a few minutes ago, they had the squad, Denmark, to absolutely make the last 16 and maybe even a little bit more at these championships. The Ericsson story has unfortunately taken pretty much everything out of the Finland game and has had its impact, I guess, today too, both through his absence and through the emotional expenditure that they had in that first half. And for them to maybe be going out of the group stage would be deeply, deeply unfortunate for them. But for Belgium, yeah, when you have your players coming back on, looking as fit and as able as Kevin De Bruyne did, with Eden Hazard also in reserve today, Romelu Lukaku looks like he had the bit between his teeth in that second half, they're going to be good.
Yeah, they're not absolutely out of it yet, Denmark, because four of the six third place teams will qualify. 3 points might be enough. It'll come down to goal difference and all that, but it is such a shame, as you say, like, they were a lot of people's dark horses, myself included, for the tournament, that because of the way the draw was, that actually coming second or third in that group may be quite favourable. Already though, Joe, I cannot wait, and maybe I'm getting very far ahead of myself and insulting many countries around Europe, but Italy against Belgium in Munich, July 2nd, quarterfinal, has all the hallmarks of an absolute classic from what we've seen from these two so far.
It's so funny you just said that. I just got a text about doing something with people I shouldn't really mention now on July 2nd, and you've just given me my reply. Is that night? Okay. Well, all bets are off. That's must watch.
Family event? No. I'd rather not say,
but I think maybe move to the third somehow.
Joe, we haven't seen you in 6 months. Yeah,
I've developed a cough.
One more day. Yeah. Oh, yeah, thought I had the temperature yesterday. Just done. Not worth the risk, guys.
Can't taste anything. It's gone. Yeah. I better stay home.
There was a moment in the match in the second half. Like I said, I only really saw the last 25 minutes. I was amazed, by the way, how frantic it all was. I thought Belgium would be stamping some authority on it, and yet there was a wildness to it. It was still up and down. I think the refereeing hasn't hurt, by the way. They've let challenges go. I think that injects a certain pace and rhythm into a match, and maybe crowds back and playing for your country and all these various things. But it's been really good, I agree. But there was a moment on the right-hand side where Belgium, just whatever way the play had developed, had a bit of an overload. And it was Kevin De Bruyne, Eden Hazard, Alex Witsel, Lukaku and Meunier all banging the ball around between them, and it was just, you know, fantastic stuff. So they're very impressive. You kind of think, because they're an aging golden generation, maybe they're, you know, are they ever going to get something done? And then you remember they were in a World Cup semi-final, beaten only by a headed goal from a corner against the eventual winners. So they're really in this. And then, as you say, Italy last night, my goodness, bloody hell, they are just joy to watch. Locatelli, obviously, I mean, the goal, pass it to Berardi, and the dribble and the lovely drag and pull back for his goal. And, you know, I just really like the way they play, with the fullbacks bombing on and Insigne and Berardi coming inside. And again, they're creating, you know, really difficult question marks for teams, and playing as a team, and their midfield's very balanced. And, you know, the biggest criticism you could make at the moment is that Immobile, who scored 29 goals this year and 42 the year before, maybe doesn't take every chance that comes his way. So, yeah, Damien Delaney was on last night, Nathan, and he said, and I think he had said in advance, to be fair to him, but he said Italy would win the Euros.
Yeah, I was listening to him last night, and he had the knowledge to back it up as well. He hasn't just rocked up two games in and said this. They clearly haven't been a surprise package for everybody, but it's just so un-Italian in certain ways that they have played that has been refreshing. The wildness of the last 25 minutes of that game has been replicated in lots of games, Richie. Actually it is the end of a long season, that there's so much fatigue creeping in at the end of matches, that mistakes are happening. But you think back to that Scotland game, like the amount of chances that Scotland created against the Czech Republic, and it was just end to end constantly. And maybe it's the tactics of international football, we're just not seeing it, that the defensive, maybe it's a setup with three teams getting through, that actually it's worth the risk of going for it and trying to get the win. But it's been brilliant so far.
Do you know what? There is something in the, Joe mentioned it there too, that the crowd's returning. It was noticeable, I remember, in the FA Cup final, that for the first time in over a year, we were watching a match with genuine stakes on the line, because the crowd had made such a difference to the nervous energy on the pitch. And we're seeing a lot of that, I think, in these matches, even to see what Hungary put up against Portugal the other night. Portugal obviously ran out comfortable winners in the end, but they looked like they were struggling to break them down for a while, and there was that chance that Hungary had to go ahead. And you think that these teams are going to get rattled, because there is such a force of will behind playing in front of, in a lot of the cases, their home fans, and that's added something really extra special to these Euros. I know, and I would have been critical myself heading into the tournament, of this transcontinental nature of it and the fact that it's spread across 12 different countries and it takes away something from it. Weirdly, it's actually added to it, I think, this time around. And it's with fans just making their way back to sport, I think the fact that a lot of teams have played in front of their home fans has added something extra to the Euros this time around.
And lads, I don't know what you think. It's obviously everyone's very different and might have a different take on it, but you think of the Ericsson situation. So, well, we've come through this unbelievably traumatic 15 months, and then the whole world and the footballing world, all of us looked on as we thought Christian Eriksen was dying in front of our eyes. And then there was this wonderful news that he wasn't. And there was kind of a, I don't know, a reminder of our general humanity, mortality, life's for living. Thank God it's all worked out in the end. Everybody's sort of behind Denmark. The sun is shining. Vaccines are out. There was kind of, I think there's like a little bit of that breaking out over the last couple of days as well, you know, because heaven forbid the worst had happened. It would be a very different mood now, hanging over this tournament. So I suspect whatever, I don't know, the emotional, psychological fallout of something like that happening is, it's probably feeding into the general mood of the tournament, even for people who didn't see it. When De Bruyne scored, and it was just a joyous goal, you know, he celebrated in a very respectful way. And I presume it was relating to the Eriksen situation. So I think that's kind of embedded itself slightly in the tournament as well in some kind of a way.
53106 is the text number. The news round on Off the Ball and News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. You're starting with Euro 2020, Richie?
Yeah, Belgium, as you mentioned, securing a place in the last 16 of Euro 2020. They came from behind to beat Denmark 2-1 in Copenhagen this evening, inspired by the halftime introduction of Kevin De Bruyne. He set up Thorgan Hazard for the equaliser and netted the winner himself 20 minutes from time. There were emotional scenes during the Danish anthem and a pause to applaud Christian Eriksen in the 10th minute. It was confirmed today that the Danish playmaker requires a heart starter implant. Staying with the Euros, and the Netherlands can secure top spot in Group C tonight. Frank de Boer's side welcome Austria to the Johan Cruyff Arena, where kickoff is at 8 PM. If the Dutch pick up a point, then North Macedonia's elimination will be confirmed. They lost 2-1 to Ukraine in Bucharest this afternoon. Doctors, meanwhile, have confirmed that Benjamin Pavard did not sustain a concussion in Tuesday's game with Germany. The France fullback claimed to have been knocked out for 10 to 15 seconds following a collision with Robin Gosens. Pavard was examined by an independent neurologist after the game, and he passed further tests yesterday, so does look set to be fit for their final group game with Hungary on Saturday. And finally, the Euros players have been warned that they could be fined if they follow Cristiano Ronaldo's lead and move items supplied by sponsors during press conferences. During a briefing on Monday, the Portugal captain moved two bottles of Coke off to the side before holding up a bottle of water. France midfielder Paul Pogba, practicing Muslim, then moved a bottle of Heineken alcohol-free beer out of shot at a news conference, but they won't be allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah, these are usually the situations where UEFA come down hard and heavy fines will be administered to the players. It's a difficult scenario because these players want to get paid lots of money from their clubs, who need to do sponsorship deals to get them all that money to pay for those players. So where does it end? It'll be interesting if the players take heed.
Yeah, well, I think Pogba in particular, if he's a practicing Muslim and doesn't want to be pictured next to a Heineken bottle, a 0% alcohol it may be, then I think he should keep doing his thing and pay the fine and screw them, to be honest. Like, it's just greed on UEFA's part, needless to say. It's trying to make money out of every possible moment, and Lord knows they make enough. So I've kind of no problem with Pogba or Ronaldo saying, screw you, I'm not doing that and I'll pay your fine. I mean, as you said, if they were as militant about issues like concussion and racism, then you'd almost be a bit more forgiving.
Yeah, I don't know what he has done today, but obviously he has flown to pastures new over the past year and left us behind, and well, rarely talks to us these days. But Kevin Kilbane, I was getting several DMs this afternoon, sliding into my DMs about Kilbane on Canadian TV.
Yeah.
This has been going on a while, so he is working for, let me get the name of it right now, TSN Sports, and he has the slickest home setup you have ever seen. There's a picture with his beautiful wife on one side, there's an Irish cap on the other side.
That's
there's
all changed.
There's a football there.
Yeah.
He's wearing a suit and tie.
Can I just
properly
say,
properly shaved. Like, it's like, who is this? Who is this guy?
I was on a couple of weeks ago in the presenter's chair. I think we had Kevin on before the end of the season, and he was in that exact same position, right? T-shirt on, hair, not a brush had been passed through it for the last few hours, a couple of days maybe even. And on the mantelpiece, there was no pictures of himself and herself. No Ireland cap or anything like that. There was like a bottle of Drambuie sitting on the mantelpiece. Suddenly that's been all cleared off because TSN are better than us, apparently.
Wow, I'm just proud that he's over there, you know, flew over, making a success of life. He is going to be the voice, the footballing voice of Canadian TV for the next 20 years.
Yeah. I guess you have a certain extra bit of sheen on TV over there, don't you? I guess he's going to have, you know, have to get like the teeth whitened to at least another several notches up. More expensive haircut.
Oh,
this is the way it has to go.
I was just going to say about the haircut. Is he going to have a little bit of a trip to stop the wing backs from pushing on?
Oof. I'm not sure what you're saying, but Kevin Kilbane has always denied any questions around that, and has threatened legal action as well, Richie. So I would just be careful. But somebody just in touch said they're just watching him, and he's absolutely caked in makeup. Listen, yeah. If you're going to be, Canada's a big country. If you're going to be on national TV in Canada for your 2020, why not look good?
I think I was chatting to him briefly, asking him how he was getting on. I think he's of a more critical persuasion than maybe they're used to over there. So he's giving it them both barrels.
So he is doing the reverse. So he's going to be the Canadian Dunphy.
Well, I mean, he mightn't class it as that, but yes.
Wow. God, I really need to find this channel. If someone can find some sort of an illegal stream for us, we will be tuned in.
I'll have one for you
the time. All right, no better man. We don't have a huge amount of time, Richie, if you want to run through. What else is going on?
Fog at Torrey Pines delayed the start of the US Open by 90 minutes. It means Rory McIlroy, as we mentioned, won't go out until 6 minutes past 11. Shane Lowry is 7 holes deep into his opening round. That triple bogey at the fourth, the major black mark, 2 birdies for him so far at the second and the sixth, so he's 1 under par. Over on the Golf Weekly Patreon, I've been told to read, they've recorded 40 minutes with former Ryder Cup captain Paul McGinley, an hour preview pod on top of that. And they'll have their third major watch-along party of the year on Sunday evening. John Rahm, the clear favourite for the tournament, despite his disappointment 2 weeks ago at the Memorial when he tested positive for COVID-19 on the 18th green. And Paul McGinley has told these two buckaroos that Rahm is the clear favourite for a reason.
Yeah, I don't know what he's been doing the last 5 or 6 days. And they've been very secretive about what he did, whether he had to stay in a hotel room in Ohio or if he could get his private jet back to Arizona and hook up again go back to his family environment or what he had to do. They've been quite secretive about what he's done. So that's been important, you know, because maybe he has been allowed practice over the last 4 or 5 days, but being stuck in the worst case scenario was he was stuck in a hotel room in Ohio and wasn't allowed out for, you know, 6 or 7, 8 days, whatever it was. Now that could have a big effect on how his performance would be this week. But I'm not sure if that was the case. He might have been able to go back to Arizona and he might have been able to continue with his preparation. But all the indications are that Rahm is the guy to beat, you'd have to say. You know, as I say, golf course, form coming back, putting coming back, golf course that he loves, and you know, hasn't won a major championship yet. It has to be a matter of time before he starts racking those up. Because this guy, my personal view, he's the best player in the game at the moment. That'd be my personal view. I do think I watched him a lot. I've been around him. You know, we won the Irish Open down at La Hinch. I watched him a lot and spent a lot of time with him around there. I've been watching him a lot on tour, and just the way he hits the golf ball. And I look at the strength from driver through putter in his game. It's phenomenal. And he's got an incredible deep passion about the game, incredibly driven. I think at this moment in time he is the best player in the game, but he's got to prove by winning major championships, you know, and it's time to step up to that level, John.
Yeah, John Rahm, one of the late starters tonight. That was 45 minutes with Paul McGinley on Tuesday. We had an hour and a half of a US Open preview yesterday. We've got some very special guests lined up for the live watch-along at 7 o'clock on Sunday. We'll have the Monday review pod as well. You get all of that for every single major on Golf Weekly Patreon. Just get over to otbsports.com/golfweekly. You can sign up for the price of $3.99 a month plus VAT. That's how you do it with enthusiasm, Richie. Maybe try a little bit better for the Open Championship in a few weeks' time, or we'll just get... Remember when Anne-Marie was on last Thursday? That was the sort of enthusiasm we were looking for. After watching Joe, Brooks Koepka roll one in from about 25 feet to move into a share of the lead.
I did try to tell you.
You did. Going for 3 and 4 years for Brooks Koepka. A long way to go, obviously, but he's tied with Xander Schauffele. Brooks Koepka or Xander Schauffele in contention on a Sunday is a very different thing, a very different feeling, and a very different decision you're making whether you're going to stay up until 2 in the morning.
I mean, Xander's a very nice young man, however.
But, yes, very nice. Richie, time for a couple more stories?
Yeah, talks about to appoint Paulo Fonseca as Tottenham's new head coach have collapsed today. The former Roma boss was the clear favourite to succeed Jose Mourinho. The decision to end negotiations is believed to be all Tottenham's, with Fonseca said to be shocked and disappointed at the turn of events. Gennaro Gattuso has emerged as the new favourite for the Spurs job. He resigned as Fiorentina boss after just 22 days in charge at the Artemio Franchi Stadium. Gattuso wanted to sign players from the stable of his agent George Mendes, but the Fiorentina board saw things differently. Elsewhere, Vinny Perth will return to the Oriel Park dugout tomorrow after just 10 months away. He was confirmed as the club's head coach last night, ending a two-month search to replace Filippo Giovagnoli and Shane Keegan. Dundalk are third from bottom in the SFC Electricity Premier Division table, with fellow strugglers Longford up next. And good news for Sam Bennett, he's reportedly been cleared to defend the green jersey at the Tour de France. The Carrick and Sure sprinter had been replaced by the Dasuni Quickstep teammate Mark Cavendish at the Tour of Belgium. Bennett was given until this week to prove his fitness, and he looks set to be on the start line in Brest on Saturday week. Meanwhile, Dan Martin was today confirmed as part of the Israel Startup Nation team for this year's tour.
Yeah, very best of luck to Vinny Perth. He's obviously done a lot of work with us over the last few months. I know there's been a lot going on behind the scenes at Dundalk as to whether he would return or not, and it's a very different club, I suspect, that he's going back to, even if it is only 10 months on, and expectations maybe aren't massive, but obviously a big decision to go back, so I'm sure we'll be checking in with Vinny very soon. And the Spurs situation, Joe, is turning into a bit of a humiliation for Daniel Levy. We're on to third, fourth manager that they couldn't agree terms with, and now it seems they're almost going down that Wolves route where they're going into bed with George Mendes, they're going to have his guy, and they're going to have his players.
Yeah, it's very strange the way the talks are breaking down. Obviously, the respective managers aren't liking the assurances they're getting from Daniel Levy, which makes you wonder what assurances he gave to get Jose Mourinho on board. But I agree totally. I mean, it is starting to look very dysfunctional, I think maybe is the best word. And that's a squad, as we know, in need of major rehabilitation, not least if Harry Kane goes. So, I mean, I'm trying not to think about the Premier League right now because the international football is just so much more enjoyable. But I guarantee you come August time, there's going to be heat on Levy and heat on Spurs.
Yeah, there sure is. Even down to the fixtures coming out yesterday. So Spurs play Manchester City on the opening day of the season, and the point was being made that actually Daniel Levy will not want Harry Kane playing for Manchester City against Spurs on the opening day, so therefore wouldn't let him go in advance of that, which would mean that that saga drags on all the way into late August and probably doesn't really help anybody.
Yeah, you wonder, I mean, Kane looked really off it, didn't he, on Sunday? Just Shearer said he looked a bit slow, which sounds like almost a basic kind of criticism, but like that was kind of it. He just looked a little bit off the pace. So you wonder if he's carrying a fair few things in his mind at the moment as well. It'd be interesting to see how he goes tomorrow, obviously.
Yeah, can't wait for that game tomorrow night. England against Scotland as the 8 o'clock match. Richie, anything else?
Yeah, Rafa Nadal withdrawing from both Wimbledon and the Olympics today. The 20-time Grand Slam tennis champion admitted it wasn't an easy choice, but he's listening to his body. He went to the semi-finals in the French Open last week where he was beaten by Novak Djokovic. And sticking with tennis, the US Open organisers have confirmed that this year's tournament is going to operate at 100% capacity. As of yesterday, most coronavirus restrictions in the state of New York were lifted, with more than 70% of adults vaccinated there. The tournament gets underway on August the 30th.
Richie, great stuff as always. Joe, thank you. Enjoy the golf tonight. We'll talk to you on Sunday for our live US Open watch along. Hopefully there's plenty to look forward to in that final round. But this morning, the first episode in a new series on OTB called Passing It On was put up on all our social channels. This week, it saw Dublin's legendary father and son duo, Alan Brogan, and his father, Bernard Sr., sit down and have a chat about their careers together for the Dubs. You can see the full video right now on our YouTube channel, or you can get it on the OTB Sports app. Get onto the podcast and subscribe. We play a little bit of it now just to give you a sample as Alan asks his dad about what it was like watching his two sons lining out for Dublin.
When you watched us play, did you watch us as were you specifically watching more of what we were doing, or would you watch us as part of the team?
No, I'd watch it more as what you were doing, and in the sense what I thought you should be doing is what you should be doing as part of the team. And I know the whole game today is a 15-man game and everybody has to slot into what they're doing, whereas when we played, it was more individual football, you know, in the sense that the keeper, the fullback got the ball and he kicked it out to the middle of the park, and it was the midfielder's job to get the ball. And if they didn't get the ball, it wasn't the fullback's fault, it was the midfielder's fault. Whereas today, the way the game is played, you know, the fella distributing the ball takes as much responsibility as the fella getting the ball.
Yeah.
So you know, and in that sense, I would have looked at Jay and I'd be very conscious of it. But I know that the instructions to the team would be different than the way I thought you should have been playing.
Yeah.
I have to keep me counselling myself, you know.
I know, and I know sometimes you did, yeah. Much you didn't want it.
Yeah, that is Alan Brogan and Bernard Brogan Sr. there on our new Passing It On series, which is brought to you with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. And you can get all of that on our social channels right now. So the plan for the evening, football show coming from 9. We'll keep a close eye on the game between the Netherlands and Austria. And we'll be looking ahead to England against Scotland. Craig Brown, the former Scotland manager, is going to join us on the football show. We'll have Phil Healy, the Irish athlete, and also Lee Chin, the Wexford hurler, between 8 and 9. But up next, as always, on a Thursday, it's John Giles.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.